Sabrina Fernandez was one of three speakers at a mid-November event about Brazil's election of Bolsonaro. It was held at Carleton University in Ottawa, where she'd received her PhD in 2017 about the depoliticalization and leftist fragmentation in Brazil. She spoke by video link from Brazil. This audio is online at equitableeducation.ca.
Hi, everyone. It's my pleasure to be back talking to Carleton again. I can see some familiar faces over there. That makes me really happy because I know there's a lot of interest going on about Brazil right now. I'm also a contributing editor to Jacobin magazine in the US, and I work with the Brazilian editorial line. We have been running a lot of different articles on this, but it's also important to try to foster some other types of debates. They are more direct in terms of what's going on right now, exactly right now. And while we know right now in November in Brazil is that things are about to get worse. We are in what we call in Brazil a transitional government. So Bolsonaro just got elected and he's pulling his ministries together, and he already began doing this with a lot of problems. So a couple of things that we had, he said that he was going to end the Ministry of the Environment. So a lot of people had to make noise, and he went back on it and said, no, okay, we're gonna keep the Ministry of the Environment. He also said that he was going to get rid of the Ministry of Labor. So people started complaining, so he went back on his word. So far, when he does that, he's trying to abuse some of the tactics between Trump so far. So there's bait and switch. He comes out with something very radical, people complain, and then he goes back on it, and then he says, well, I'm actually quite moderate. I'm trying to listen to people about it, when we know it wasn't his initial idea in the first place. In fact, there are some really absurd things going on in terms of, like, the Minister of the Environment. Right now, people started saying that he was considering some popular actress who was very conservative and knows nothing about the environment to be one of his ministers. And then people just bought it. So the debate was out there. People just bought it. When we know from inside Congress that that was not the person that he was considering at all. But the idea is to make the media look like a liar, make the left look like a liar. And this is what's going on right now. The reason my purpose talking to you today, I think Shuang and Charmaine gave a really good background of the really interesting dynamics that are going on between the right and the left. A couple of things that they talked about had to do, for example, the militia or a religious fundamentalism, which is a really big problem in Brazil, and it's not new. Right now, we do know that they were quite involved in the campaign for Bolsonaro, but they have been electing their own people to Congress for a really long time. I'm right now been going reproductive. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you cut out for a second.
Okay, fundamentalists, they have been going against feminists, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, lots of moral panics around this. So the conservative element is actually quite strong, and it has been quite strong for a while. It's not completely new regarding Bolsonaro. And in that sense, we do have a lot of dynamics going on in terms of how the left has been unable to deal with this. Completely unprepared, the PT was being very hegemonic around the entire process. It had to be a PT candidate, it couldn't be anyone else. So even though they knew that Lula wasn't going to be allowed to run, especially because we're in this dynamic that's related to the coup in 2016, quite obvious that they wouldn't allow Lula to run. And some of the interviews that we ran earlier this year with PT people, including Fernando Haddad, we could tell that they knew that that as well, but they were trying to play it safe and say, no, we're still gonna go with Lula, because part of the strategy was to help Lula and help democracy at the same time, even though a lot of scholars and people in the left were saying, no, this is not going to work. So right now, what I want to talk to you about is why this wasn't working. We have a lot of deficits in terms of politicization in Brazil. I did my PhD there at Carleton talking about this, dealing with the matter of a crisis of praxis of the left. And this means that there are a lot of responsibilities to throw around. Like everyone is at least a little bit accountable to what's going on in Brazil right now, even though the logic is always to blame everyone else. So Ciro Gomes, for example, who was a center-left candidate this year, he disappeared after the first round. When he didn't go to the first round, he disappeared. He went to Paris, I believe. And when he came back, he was just blaming the PT. And the reason that Bolsonaro got elected was the PT. And then PT, as usual, he's just they're just blaming every dynamic in terms of, wow, look at that. The right is so anti-PT, and there's a coup, and they're going to do everything they can do to stay in power. And that's absolutely true. There's no novelty in that. It's actually quite strange for them to realize this now. Why didn't they realize that before? And that's part of the problem. Lula gave this interview earlier in the year. It's a quite extensive interview. It was about 10 hours long. It became a book. And in this book, you could tell, the book was released actually about 10 days before he got arrested. And you could tell that he felt very betrayed by the Brazilian bourgeoisie. Which is something to consider. I remember writing a lot about this in my PhD dissertation, and people who were favorable towards the PT claiming that that was absurd. But you could tell from his own words that he was feeling very betrayed, that he was trying to help the bourgeoisie, and then they just betrayed him. And he didn't really understand why, which is the strangest thing of all. And what we're seeing right now is this horrible result of past conciliation. A couple of things that Charmaine talked about in terms of working with social movements, some level of co-optation of social movements, all of that was involved. And that's one arm of the things that incurred in demobilization. So when the threats of the coup came along in 2015 to 2016, we couldn't really take people to the streets. Fatalism was very common. People just felt that, well, nothing else is going to change. At the same time, anti-PT sentiment was very common. And anti-PT sentiment, despite what the big people in PT would say, is not just some crazy conspiracy theory orchestrated by the right in terms of trying to blame everything on the PT. The reason why it works is because this kind of sentiment is sort of like a currency. It has to be attached to a meaning that has that resonates with people in their everyday life. So PT did walk along, a lot of members of the bourgeoisie, of the elite, people who were involved in corruption, whether Lula is innocent or not, he was walking around the country and helping with projects and believing very strongly in people who were involved in corruption. So that helps the right to make this linkage. Okay, look at this. There's these corrupt companies, and look at that, Lula was with them. So part of the problem that we're dealing with here today is that the fake news that are going around, all these tactics that people are using to compare to Trump, actually, even though I agree with João that it's not a direct parallel, but in terms of tactics, they're quite common. So the usage of fake news, fire hosing, so in that sense of just taking away all the credibility and making sure that only he would be the official source that people should take seriously in the country. So they will do the bait and switch, and then the media will lose credibility as well. All of that's quite similar to Trump. And the reason why they're able to do this is because very important meanings around class struggle, around antagonism in Brazil, they have been lost. It's not a matter of the past 2 or 3 years. It's not something that begins in 2016 when Dilma Rousseff is ousted from power. It's something that goes back at least 10 years. If you think of Lula's first mandate and even his first letter, as soon as he was about to get elected, his letter trying to calm the markets and say, well, I'm not going to be that radical. This is something that goes back that far. And I think it's important for us to consider that, because right now, the left has to, is obliged to engage in self-critique. It has to figure out where things went wrong. The problem is that we're dealing with this thing that I call a crisis of deficit. that has to do with a lot of these alignments between theory and action and agitation and propaganda and the way that the left behaves to its own base, basically in a vanguardist position or in a very populist position. And what we see is that they're not trying to engage in self-critique, they're trying to blame each other. So Ciro Gomes, who is center-left, who probably would, we don't know for sure because of the fake news and fire hosing that Ciro would have won. We're not sure, but he probably would have won because he wasn't really suffering from a lot of the anti-PT sentiment that contributed to people voting for Bolsonaro. A lot of people voted for Bolsonaro thinking that Bolsonaro was the lesser evil. That PT was the big enemy in that sense, and that Bolsonaro, well, we don't know if he's corrupt yet, even though he's implicated in corruption schemes, nothing in terms of charges being pressed against him, but he even said that, well, the party put 200,000 reais in my account, I just didn't know I was involved, a few lists with his name cited on them. So that kind of thing, but people are, no, we're going to give Bolsonaro the benefit of the doubt, we just hate the PT so much. So that's part of the element. And Ciro Gomes probably would have been affected by a little bit because he's considered to be a leftist, but not as much as Haddad was because Haddad didn't even get a chance to introduce himself to the country. Part of this is because of the anti-PT sentiment. Part of this is because of the PT strategy. The PT strategy was just simply lame. From the beginning, they were trying to associate defending Brazilian democracy with defending Lula, and that didn't help Lula, and it didn't help democracy. It just didn't work for anyone. And it also has to do with the fact that democracy has a very loose meaning in Brazil right now. And it has had a loose meaning for a while. One of the things that I say that the PT will be responsible for is not just this demobilization, but the depoliticization as well. All of these different meanings, they're very important for the left to build on and then go further in a more radical direction and maybe in a revolutionary direction. The PT made sure to bring them down a notch because we couldn't be dealing with that. We had to reconcile with the market. We had to make sure that things could go in a direction of progressive social change, but not too much. So one of the points was to cut away the alternative, say that nothing else was possible. I've actually worked on this. My book is coming out in Portuguese in at the end of next month. So actually being published in January. And one of the things I've been talking about is this really weird dynamic where Lula and the PT at that time, they were responsible for thinking like Fukuyama. But instead of just being the end of history, it was the end of utopias for the left as well. It's just trying to make sure people calm down. We don't have the correct correlation of forces right now. We can't do much else. So if you're trying to push it in a more leftist direction, you're actually going to have the wrong. And then at every time to criticize them. And right now, absolutely, they say you can't criticize at all. And this is part of a cycle. If we can't go on and engage in this kind of criticism to try to figure out what went wrong and what we can't repeat anymore, we'll just be stuck in the cycle. And I've been using Gramsci for this. So I studied Gramsci with Justin when I was there. And in relation to Gramsci's interregnum, right? It's this moment that we're stuck in a crisis of authority in Brazil. The left lost its hegemonic power. Not just in terms of the elections, but in general, people don't even know what left and right mean anymore. We have been having a couple of problems in terms of people in the right being white, very organized, online and in other spaces claiming that Hitler was a socialist and that kind of claim, and actually trying to argue with people who came out of Germany about it. And then Roger Waters was in Brazil last month, and he did this tour, and he was actually denouncing neo-fascism throughout the world. And then people were saying that he was actually being paid by the PT to do that. Or then people started trying to explain the lyrics of Another Brick in the Wall to Roger Waters, as if he didn't know the meaning of his own lyrics. So this is the point where we are in Brazil. Meanings have been lost. So that's why I think depoliticization is a key thing for us to understand why fascism is rising. We might not have a fascist government just yet, and I hope we won't have a fascist government, but we do have is a set of fascist ideas that are coming through and are being justified to people in many different ways, even to people who will not consider themselves fascist or they would identify with that, but they're starting to identify with anti-communism, for example, or anti-Marxism. We were doing work trying to get people out to vote, but understand why they were voting in the past month. And just common people in the streets, very, very working class, very precarious people, they would turn to me, but like, well, but you didn't you know Marx was a Satanist? He was a pagan. And that's really bad. And he was involved with witchcraft. And one of these really odd situations where I have to go back, no, let's talk about this. But what is the point for me to have to be explaining to people these things about Marx rather than actually like talking about the situations that are going to affect them? Because Bolsonaro's campaign ran on a lot of moral panics around everything, about how there would be the PT was involved in programs to teach kindergarten kids or in primary school how to be homosexuals, that kind of idea, and the ideology of gender. So all of these conservative conspiracy theories are part of it. You might have noticed in a couple recent news articles that came out, especially in The Guardian, I believe yesterday, talking about our future foreign minister and how he's not just a climate change denier. That's not even the biggest problem. If you look, he had a blog, and if you like read around his blog, is every single conspiracy theory besides flat earth theory. Like, so the only thing, not a flat earther, but everything else is there. So what we're dealing right now is a loss of meanings. Our signifiers became empty because the PT was depoliticizing them, and then the right, the extreme right, did a really good job at filling them with these very distorted meanings about left and right and democracy. People claiming that democracy, for example, is just switching presidents. So if we voted for PT, that would be anti-democratic because now it's time to elect someone else, and that would be democratic. But if you look at the history of Brazil, our liberal democracy, as limited as it is, was never questioned from 1988 when we had this new constitution in terms of how to actually expand this. The PT did no work on this. Besides working on participatory budgeting, it just kept paying attention to these processes of consultation. They weren't really involved in trying to get people to participate beyond this particular outlet or bringing social movements into different arms of the government, so like ministries and secretariats and things like that. So participation was very toned down. Social movements were persecuted. They're nothing in the sense like they're going to be right now, but we can't forget that it was Dilma Rousseff in 2016 when she was about to get ousted from power that who went ahead and signed the anti-terrorism bill that's going to be used now to criminalize the landless workers movement, the homeless workers movement, because Bolsonaro has promised to do away with all of the rights. Anti-communism is really strong. So even though we can say that the government will be straight fascist, and there are a lot of discussions going on in terms of whether it's fascism, neo-fascism, proto-fascism, and everything else, and I think that's really important for us in academia to look at, but politically, it's very important for us to brace ourselves for fascism, no matter what. In that sense that we need to be prepared and we need to organize. And this is the particular problem that Brazil is facing right now, because the left is as disorganized as ever. Even though in the second round during the campaign, you could see some level of unity going on, for example, between the Workers' Party and the Socialism and Freedom Party. Socialism and Freedom Party being PSOL and being a very small party. Though it has some sort of visibility online, it's actually quite small compared to the Workers' Party. They were together, they were campaigning against Bolsonaro, but for example, the center-left was very resentful because they thought that the PT should have withdrawn their candidate and supported Ciro Gomes instead. So they just basically just went ahead and voted against Bolsonaro, but they weren't involved in campaigns. So we could see a problem like that. Now we can see that people from the center left are actually claiming that Ciro was better, as if Ciro Gomes were to the left of the PT, which he was never to the left of the PT, never. So this is one of the problems right now. And we're just unable to try to come out with these conclusions about this period and try to organize forwards without these organizations fighting for hegemony. And this is one of the points, because one of the things that I have been exploring as well is the idea that the Brazilian left is very melancholic. The radical left is also responsible for the situation we're in. They just waited thinking that, well, the Workers' Party, they're just going to stumble and fall because they're being reformist, or they've become a party of order or something like that. And they were just waiting that, well, their base is just going to shift. They're going to leave the Workers' Party and they're going to come to the PSOL or the PSU or a different party. When it was actually quite strange to think that way, because it's not what happened. The base that left the Workers' Party went towards the extreme right. And the other base that's not there is just very disillusioned, because we can't forget that we had a record number of annulled votes, blank votes, and people who just abstained from voting, even though voting is mandatory in Brazil, people just abstained from voting. There was a record number because of a crisis of. And the radical left was not able to interpolate these people. And why? This is a question that should be asked right now, and it's not being asked because people are just pointing fingers at everyone else. So it is this very complicated situation for us to be in Brazil right now, because at the same time that we know that we're going to be criminalized, we know that we're going to be probably censored. So I do this work online. We're actually bringing Jacobin to Brazil next year as well. And I have received death threats. I have received rape threats. I'm always getting hate mail and things like that because of my position. And this is one of the situations that we know is going to get worse. We already have a lot of people that we're trying to get shelter for because they're being persecuted already. And we know it's going to get worse. And even though we know it's going to get worse, the left is either fighting in terms of who's going to get the scraps from what was left from the PT, and the PT very strongly believing that, well, everything should be blamed on the right, and people, if we free Lula, everything's going to be fixed. And at the same time, there are people just worried in terms of, Trotsky's fighting with Stalinists, and we're in the same dynamic as always. When I look at my field work that began in 2013 with this fragmented left in Brazil, and I look at what I'm witnessing right now in this fragmented left in Brazil, the dynamics are the same. And this is what worries me a lot, because at some point we're going to start seeing things that are worse than these random victims of violence, because this has already happened, fostered by Bolsonaro, but something actually more critical. He's trying to get rid of the Cuban doctors. It's part of the process. He came up with he exploited some of the contradictions in the program to try to get rid of them. But he's been very clear. He said it's either prison or exile for those who oppose me. And people are starting to believe, oh, well, he's not like that. He's not anti-democratic. It's just that the communists are all bandits. They're all criminals. So that's the people that we have to get rid of anyway. So people who would not identify with fascism right away, they are so strongly anti-communist right now, they're willing to support getting away of some level civil liberties and political liberties in order to appease themselves in terms of this moral panic that was created. And that has to do with the problem of history. The Brazilian left was not able to talk about what happened in the Brazilian dictatorship that started in 1964 and went until the late 1970s. In a way that actually politicized people. We had no transitional justice here. We did have a truth commission, but it didn't go much far. It stayed within academia, within a few leftist circles. So people are defending torture again. And people are thinking it's okay torture someone if you believe that the person, if that person might have done something wrong. Human rights are a problem right now. Human rights are considered, even though we're always talking about how human rights are within the liberal line, human rights in Brazil are considered like this very radical communist thing. So everything has been shifted in terms of meaning. And the reason this is happening is because depoliticization is reigning like crazy in Brazil. One of the concepts that I've been using to describe this, and I use that in the book as well, is ultra-politics, which is this concept that Zizek introduced about 20 years ago, and then he forgot about it, as usual. He does that a lot. And then I went back and I took the concept, found a couple of other people who were working with the concept. And the idea with ultra-politics is when you're depoliticizing around this constructed enemy. So instead of us looking in terms of how we do have enemies in society today, and they're the people who are oppressing us, they're the people who hold the means of production, and they're the people who want to ensure that the majority of the people in the country remain excluded and remain exploited. That would be antagonism. That would be a very politicized way of dealing with our material enemies in society. And this is not what we see today. We see the right building this huge enemy out of the PT, associating the PT with communism, which is wrong in the first place, and also associating communism with everything that is wrong in society, making people who have never heard of communism before panic at the sight of the word, panic in terms of anything that means red or leftist. And at the same time, the left has been unable to escape from this own dynamic. So the way they're all pointing fingers at each other instead of going to the root of the problem, and the way they have internalized this logic of political dispute over the hegemony during this crisis of authority in the interregnum, as if that meant, you know, having the capacity right away to either overcome the situation or just go back a couple of years when in the eyes of the PT, everything was fine. Everything was fine when Lula was in power. We were progressing in a steady pace towards less poverty, which is something to be considered. The social programs should be considered, but the contradictions around them should be considered as well. And those, they don't want to cut. They think that was okay. They think that was necessary. And this is something that worries me a lot. And finally, in the sense, there's a little glimmer of hope. There are people who are becoming politicized right now because of what happened in the second round, because they're scared of Bolsonaro, and they don't want to just go through the regular structures, vanguardist positions through the parties. They want to be doing base building work. So we're seeing that pop up in different places in the country. My fear is that there will either be thrown within this very hostile dynamics of the parties very soon, because the parties are not acknowledging how hostile the dynamics are, or they're just going to feel so threatened that they're going to leave the streets. And this is one of the problems right now, because we do need to have people doing all kinds of work, not just demonstrations. The left, since 2013, has replaced the idea of organizing workers and organizing the oppressed with large demonstrations in the streets, and then fighting with the police, claiming that they had more people in the streets than the police was claiming. This has become the dynamics, very melancholic dynamics in Brazil. When we do have these people popping up and they want to be doing other kinds of work in the streets, actually talking to people and trying to organize, this is something for us to pay attention to. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if the left in Brazil is quite prepared to handle these different dynamics right now without trying to make everything about these old school diagnostics they have come up with. So the PSOL blaming the PT just blaming the right and not doing any self-critique, the center left appealing to the right and engaging with anti-PT sentiment as well. And in the end, we're now today facing what I would say the fascist future president with a very authoritarian government, quite not fascist yet, but authoritarian, maybe something like what we see with Erdogan in Turkey. And the left is just behaving as if it was 5 years ago. That's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening. This audio and two others, as well as accompanying article, printable PDF, and links to references and solidarity organizing, are all available online at equitableeducation.ca.